So our second reading comes from the book of Luke, chapter 2, 1 to 14. Listen now for the word of God. In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. In that region, there were shepherds living in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. Then an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid, for see, I am bringing you good news of great joy for all the people. To you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign for you. You will find a child wrapped in bands of cloth and lying in a manger." And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth peace, goodwill among people." Holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God. Now there is a concern that seems to go around the country every year at this time. People are worried Christ is being left out of Christmas. And I get it. Christmas is getting so commercialized. It is losing its original meaning. Do you agree? What do you think we can do then to help Christ stay in Christmas? If you think about it, Jesus was the best gift God ever gave to the world. But the celebration of Christ in Christmas is so much more than just saying Merry Christmas. We are to live as Jesus would have us be daily. That means loving all, providing safety and equality for all, blessing the poor in spirit, and giving them hope with hands-on help. The formula for ruining the Christmas spirit is made up of trying to imitate, for instance, the holiday images that we see on TV. Getting that new shiny car, instead of maybe saving up money for those helping who need help, those in need. Shopping till you drop, and then get yourself as many gifts as you give. That actually was a message that I saw on a commercial the other day. When you go out and buy something for someone else, you're also supposed to buy something for yourself at the same time. Now, Christmas is about the earth-shattering presence of God given to our world in the form of a humble baby born to set us free from the earthly bondage of greed and envy and division and oppression. The Prince of Peace was sent to help us see and feel what God's love is tangibly and viscerally. Yet when people say, "Keep Christ in Christmas," it almost implies that we want to package Jesus up and keep him trapped in Christmas and not let him free to be in us and to work through us all the other seasons of the year. Do we really want to keep Christ in Christmas because we can control him there? We can keep him in the form of an adorable little white baby surrounded by white parents with white shepherds, heralded by big white angels. What if we let Jesus be Jesus and let him be born brown in a stable that is smelly and more humble and disorganized than we can ever imagine? The real Jesus, not the whitewashed Jesus, is someone that we all can relate to. He really looked like a combination of all humans around the world. He was poor and lowly, and yet so resilient and powerful, powerful enough to break free of the bonds of oppression and eventually reign as our King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But he didn't do it alone. He had help long before he called the 12 disciples. In the biblical birth of Christ's story, the young Holy Family doesn't break free from poverty and oppression by pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps. The shepherds and the three kings come to share their adoration, but also their knowledge and their resources and their wealth to help the young family survive. Jesus shows us through this birth story how to be humble, and also how to help the humble who have no way out of poverty without our help. God was teaching us a lesson in this birth story about how to effectively help the poor and homeless refugees. When a refugee comes to you for help, you make room in the inn. You welcome the stranger into your home or your home state for safety and hospitality. No matter how or where they came from, you rejoice with them when they have children, and you stay connected, doing all you can to keep them safe and healthy and happy. The details of how Christ came to earth can be debated, and frankly, it doesn't matter exactly where or what day or how his birth happened. What matters is he came to be Emmanuel, God with us, and so we could see and feel and learn how to give God's love and peace, forgiveness, hope, and joy to others. I can get bogged down by the intense commercialism, too, that happens at this time every year. And I have to ask myself, it seems like every year, what do I really believe about this birth story of Jesus Christ? How can we believe such a miracle really happened? A preacher really can't preach if she doesn't authentically have faith in the message. So I ask myself every year, is this just a fantasy story that has been carried over the years because the shepherds and the angels and the donkeys and the idea of a newborn baby in the manger is just so adorable and precious? Now, when I question things, I satisfy my doubts by exploring the scriptures again and looking up the historical facts. So let's look at the historical setting of Christ's birth story. I have walked in these places, and I am so grateful they have been preserved for all to visit around the world still today. When you visit the Holy Land and you walk in the footsteps of Jesus, all doubts are washed away in the dust. It's a trip I wish everyone could take of all faiths. You learn so much about Judaism and the Muslim faith as well, because they all share the land. And that's the way it's meant to be. They all share it. Tourists and scholars and archaeologists from all faiths continue to more fully understand the history of the Holy Land when they see it and work with it with their own eyes. But today, my heart is so sad for Syria and the holy places there that are being bombed and destroyed. Our passage today said, this was the first registration which was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. So let's look at the map and find Syria to understand where the Roman Empire ruled this region when Jesus was born. Now, it's hard for you to see maybe from a distance, but the big circle is actually the Mediterranean Sea. And you can see where Rome is, I think, pretty easily. But if you look way over to the right, there you see Syria above Jerusalem. That's where. This is a map of when Jesus was born. And that whole dotted area was the Roman Empire, everything inside that dotted area. It's pretty amazing to think of how much they controlled at that time. And so from this, you can see how extensive the empire was. And it was Octavius Augustus. That was the full name of the emperor's name. He's credited with establishing the Roman Empire as a clearly bordered empire, but without walls. Augustus began ruling the empire 27 years before Christ's birth. And Syria was this region that's just above what now we call modern-day Israel. At the time of Jesus' birth, his parents were in Nazareth, and that region was called Galilee at this time, which is just barely below Syria. And then here in the next map, you can see the journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem that Jesus and Mary would have taken. Now, that one's hard for you to see with the way it is, but it's that blue line up there. You can see how long the blue line is. If you type into Google Maps distance between Nazareth and Bethlehem, this is what comes up. It shows you exactly how the journey would have gone. Now, driving this journey, it says, would just take 2 hours in a car, but walking would take 33 hours. And then walking while pregnant, which isn't one of the things that they give you as an option, but walking while pregnant would have taken at least 40 hours or more, considering the need to stop to breathe and to rest every couple hours. So even though the Bible stories often show Mary sitting on a cute little donkey on this journey, there is no mention in the Bible anywhere of a donkey carrying her to Bethlehem. They were probably too poor, actually, to have a donkey. But considering that they would have been among an entourage of other people all traveling the same journey, it's likely they did have help from others. No one traveled, if they could help it, totally alone in those days because there were always bandits waiting to attack travelers. This video shows how it might have been for them traveling on that long journey. Let's turn the lights down. You can see the other people that would have been around them. And I love this because it shows Mary putting her feet in the water. They would have been swollen by now, probably.
I don't know.
So every movie about Mary and Joseph and the birth story seems to have its own little flavor to it. And besides including a donkey in this one, they had a child lead them to the place where Jesus could be born. I think that's a wonderful thing to add that's also not in the scriptures, but it's very symbolic of children leading and helping and being supportive of the whole process. Now, this long journey for Mary and Joseph to register for the census in Bethlehem, we remember, was followed by a rushed and panicked, unplanned journey to Egypt after the birth of Jesus, when they heard that King Herod had ordered the killing of all the children 2 years and younger. Herod was determined to wipe out any future challenge to his political power. And so Mary, Joseph, and baby Jesus fled the genocide and became refugees and immigrants in Egypt. Now, remembering and praying for the refugees still fleeing places like Syria is one of the ways to keep the spirit of Christ in Christmas, not just during Christmas, but other times during the year as well. So how do we keep Christ in Christmas? We don't try to keep him there. Christ can't be contained or trapped into just one season of the year. We let Jesus be Jesus, and we do our best to be Christ-like as often as possible. So spend your Christmas time and all the other times of the year helping those who can't hear the good news that God is love, because they have never truly been loved in this life here on earth. Many don't really know what love is. My hope is that you will be inspired by this Christmas story again this year and reassure your neighbors that when life seems hopeless, you will help them rise up out of the ashes. When we work together, there is hope. And then stay with them, mentor them into that hope. Help them connect with others. Advocate and network on behalf of those who are less fortunate than you are. Christ came to earth to stay by being our role model of forgiveness in our loving relationships and also in our reaching out to the stranger, the homeless, the addicted, the mentally ill, and the sick. Jesus said, "I am with you always, to the end of the age." Christ stays with us when we carry on with his ministry of love that empowers us to go out boldly, out of our comfort zones, to give more generously, and to shape our society to be more loving and giving and selfless. Living a life that imitates Jesus' ministry on earth results in unintended mutual blessings, too. You give yourself a gift, but not in the way that commercial talks about, but you give yourself a gift when you give of yourself to help others. Not only are you healthier in mind, body, and spirit when you live a generous, compassionate life, but when you advocate so others may live as healthy as you do, the mutual blessings flow back and forth and around between you and those you help. Now, it just makes sense when others around you are not sick or depressed or desperately poor, then you are likely to not get sick or depressed or affected by those who are desperate. When people are desperate, they do desperate things. The lonely are vulnerable to gangs. The poor may resort to robbery. The sick may end up spreading the disease. The health of our society as a whole is very sick right now. But truly following the Christian ethic means do all we can to correct these problems, including sharing our wealth so others may rise up and be healthy too. For our own health, we must strive to make our society one of mutual health and well-being. When one of us is in need, we are all impacted in some way. We are all one. That is the universal law of interconnection and how God created us to be. When you love your neighbor, you end up loving yourself because that love grows and ends up benefiting your own well-being. It is so simple and yet so hard for some people to grasp. Christmas literally means Christ Mass, which means Christ worship. You are called to worship Christ not just on Christmas Eve or on Christmas Day, but every day. But not here in church every day, but by imitating the good work of Jesus with your hands and with your feet. Worship Jesus with your life. That is what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown. I recently discovered a new way for keeping Christ in Christmas, and I'm really excited about this new organization that I found. Supporting the good work of organizations like this, who empowers refugees with productive ways to sustain themselves and their families, will last a long, long time and will help these people and all of us eventually if they can learn to sustain themselves. So let's watch this new video I found about Syrian refugee women who were taught to make soap. Let's turn the light down.
بالداعش ما باستا ام هفروجات جيمان بنان واف زورنا خوش بو منالي زك هبو زورنا خوشي هبو چو قصد خاني هم وشتهنا وش برچام مرن وقا قيد شاقا بجا عمري هفصال ونش برچام مرد جي زور نخوش بنا یک برا بو کشتن عداعش باب کو کشتن دای کو هاتن سوری قاچاقی هاتن سلیمانی
هاتی ما باز دای جی نبو خیمه نبو من آدمی شد با معانی و با مناله خم میچاکی کرده و فروشم. بر باشتره بی.
صابون بو اما چاکانی زور حالی ما خوش بو مناله بو شیر و حفاده.
بس عدش مره کر تشتی سیبون تشتش مره آنین. نام چه نکن تکیوسا ام چه نکن شغل نی نه میر بشغلن
قرص نیه تو باشیش صابون و زیت و آبی کلی کرست تیکال کن
زور خوشه معیشتی صابون پیش زر من علیم برای دو سالی دی می‌بینم وگر نه وطنی خوب می‌بینم چی نجی خوب
کندش و با و هوا بسعدش مرد نکر با و جمعاتی خوب معیشه تامان ند بو من فدریجی معیشه تامان ند
So if you want some of this soap, go to preemptivelovecoalition.org and you will find it. So in closing, I just want to share a few words from a new friend. I met the president of San Francisco Theological Seminary for the first time at the Salvation Army here in Santa Rosa, the day that pastor volunteers were called out to help support the firestorm survivors when they were first allowed back into their neighborhoods to see the remains of their houses. They wanted us to be there to support them as they looked through the ashes. And so Reverend Dr. James McDonald showed up that morning with his wife, and then Professor Scott Clark, who often attends here too, was with them. I was so impressed they drove up all the way from San Anselmo that morning to support Santa Rosa. So Dr. McDonald recently wrote a devotional explaining how Jesus was born for all of us. He said, "A child born for us, not just any child, but God with us, in human form, as a servant, a slave, an outcast, a refugee, as one despised and rejected. This child was born in humble circumstances to ordinary people without privilege or power, not to wave a magic wand that fixes everything or solves every problem and banishes every malcontent and tyrant. This child was born to be a champion of the poor, the persecuted, the peacemakers, the pure in heart, the merciful, the meek, those who mourn, those who hunger and thirst for justice. This is the way God chose to come and live among us, to show us the meaning and purpose of life and the power of love." I love those words. I think it really encapsulates the real meaning of Christmas. And so let's prepare the manger for Jesus by taking, if you were able to, a strip of cloth that you were given at the door. And for a moment, ponder what gift from your life you bring to the child. And then if you would like, please come up and lay the cloth on the manger to prepare for Jesus as we sing Silent Night.